You needn't be a communist to care about your community.
Don't touch that, it's growing. Be careful, you guys.
Community Garden with Oscar Perez.
Indeed, we are in the community garden. However, we have wandered a little further afield than normal. We've meandered into the wonderful garden that is Hamilton to talk to a member of the Hamilton group, Torti. So Torti will be explained what that means later. But yeah, it's a little group that are calling for an almost invisible piece of national history to be publicly acknowledged this week. And that means today, which is Tuesday, it is the centenary of the 1919 Women's Parliamentary Rights Act, which for the first time allowed women to stand for election to the House of Representatives, i.e. to become MPs for Aotearoa. I was lucky enough, as I said in the intro, to speak to Torti's Margaret Evans, who also happened to be Hamilton's first female mayor between 1989 and 98. So we discussed what the legislation is about, who she is, who Torti is, and how we can appropriately commemorate and celebrate the passing of this piece of legislation.
I'm Margaret Evans, and I'm part of a small Hamilton trust called Torti, which comes from the Theatre of the Impossible, which I guess is a play upon what we do. And that is try and engage the community in memory that's relevant to what we're doing today, and hopefully to make a better tomorrow.
1919 was the year, 100 years ago, which saw the implementation and enactment of the Women's Parliamentary Rights Act. What did that mean at the time, and what does it mean now?
Well, I think if I can say now, it's with some surprise we look back, because we have a woman prime minister, we have quite a large number of women members of parliament, cabinet ministers, we also have a whole pile of women mayors and city and district councillors, and it seems quite strange to look back and think that there was a time when women were prohibited from taking these positions, from being elected into these positions. And that is one of the reasons that we think it's worthwhile promoting this centenary. Why did it happen? We do know from the records that the lead up to 1893, which was when New Zealand made world history and women were given the vote, the right to vote for members of parliament, that debate at the time ranged from our brains were not big enough. It would put us away from the home front, that it would be not a good thing to have us all out in public going to the polling booths. And again, we look back at that and think, oh my goodness, that is so surprising. But it was the culture of the times. What is interesting, though, even though women were given the right to vote, they were specifically prohibited from standing to become candidates for election to Parliament. And that lobby continued for the next few years. And in fact, by the time 1919 came, New Zealand was a bit behind the ball for the rest of the world. And we think that the reason the vote finally came to give women the right to stand for Parliament in 1919 was probably because the Brits gave their women both the right to vote and the right to be parliamentarians in 1918. And if you cast your mind back, that was clearly just as the First World War was ending. And we think that women obviously showed that they were just as capable of men of doing a whole range of things that they had to do because the men were away at the war. So New Zealand finally did allow women to stand for Parliament in 1919. There's another interesting element to this, though. They were only allowed to stand for what is called the lower house. In those days, we had two houses in Parliament. We had the lower house of representatives, and then we had the upper legislative council. and the Legislative Council's members were appointed by the government, and it was the government of the day that enabled the 1919 Act to come in, but refused to allow women to be appointed to the upper house. We don't, of course, have the upper house anymore. So it's been quite a long story, but today we aren't quite there in terms of the 50-50 thing, but I do believe that it would be a very brave person, man or woman, who would say that women should be prohibited from these positions in this country.
So at what point did women gain access to the upper house?
They didn't.
So it took until the structure of Parliament was restructured for them to gain access to kind of essentially changing legislation?
It was 1941 when they were still barred from the upper house. And the Legislative Council, again, we think that's possibly because of the contemporary situation with the Second World War. And then the upper house was canned, I think, in the 1950s.
And so this piece of legislation and then the restructure of Parliament, did that encompass both levels of central and local government, or were those two distinction things, well, were they not two distinct separate bodies at the time?
They were quite separate. When the provincial councils were canned, women were allowed to vote within the local government sector. Now, that's a whole other subject because, of course, the original voters were ratepayers, and women had to own property in order to be able to vote locally. So that's another whole complex story. But it seems as though women were more involved in local government back in those days than they were in central government because, of course, they were specifically prohibited. And can I say one more thing? It's interesting, talking with people, we're very proud of the fact that New Zealand was the first country in the world to give women the vote. But I think it's important to understand the actual legislation was not a Women's Suffrage Act. What it did was amend the definition of person so that person included women.
Personally as well, I feel hugely, not necessarily miseducated, but undereducated in our history even. Why do you think there is perhaps, kind of, and I'm sure I'm not alone in being undereducated in this area. Why do you think there is an undereducation or miseducation around these, even though like parliamentary changes in the past?
Look, I think first of all, you're not on your own there. We're all the same, and I think that Totti is really excited at the moment because there seems to be such an interest in our history. Perhaps it's because, for a start, there is so much history. Nobody can know it all. So what's important is to encourage in everybody, not just the young people, but particularly the young people, a thirst for knowing more, because that is how we get a much better understanding, generally, of why we're at the point we are today. And we just say to people, if you've got a particular interest, at least in the digital era, you have got such marvellous access to information. And so go find out for yourself. Spend some time, with Ms. Google and find out a bit more. That is one of the challenges. Now, why do we seem to not feel as though we know enough? I think it's just because people are busy, they get on with things, and some of these stories just do fade into the past. That's why I love librarians. That's why we love archivists, because they are the people that keep this alive for us. And we are really lucky in this country that we have got so many of our records digitised. Our National Library Services are just phenomenal. It's not everything that you have to depend on going to the library to get a book. You can just plug in. So what's good about now is that there is much more digging. We are having these conversations. I think the 250th centenary, which has introduced the Polynesian voyaging, is another good example that you can come to one story, and then you find there are a lot of other stories.
There's so many levels to kind of our knowledge in history, and as I did talk around the Tuya 250 about this kind of network of stories. And so I guess one way we see the 1893 woman's right to vote suffrage, not necessarily celebrated, but remembered or kept alive, is through the kind of example of perhaps Kate Shepherd. Are there any pioneers or voices that have faded into the history books around the 1919 laws that would be amazing to be brought to light in your eyes?
Well, the consequence of that we think is interesting. For instance, Iria Karatina, who was the first Maori woman MP, and she was also the first woman MP for Western Maori, where Hamilton is based. And we feel that there are many people who don't know about her. She was elected in 1949, and she was a Member of Parliament for 20 years. She was hugely instrumental in the Maori land rights issues. She ushered through the Maori Land Trust Board's legislation. So she's a significant figure for all of us, and yet she has almost been lost, apart from, of course, her own family. I think the other thing in terms of the stories to share, she and Hilda Ross, who was the Member of Parliament for Hamilton, elected in 1945, she was also the second woman cabinet minister. Mabel Howard from Christchurch was the first. Now, Hilda Ross and Iria Karatina were a shining example of what we expect from our Members of Parliament today. They were hands-on. They were totally and utterly committed to improving the lot for the people of New Zealand. They collaborated, even though Hilda was National, Iriaka was Labour. They went everywhere together. You may have seen the photograph of the two of them in 1950, which was taken at Te Rangawaewae. That was, interestingly enough, for the 600th anniversary of what was in those days called the Great Fleet. And the Māori scholars of the time, the Māori leaders of the time, took this story around the country, having meetings and hui everywhere, talking about the Great Fleet, which of course is the Polynesian voyaging. And it's interesting that the government sent these two women to the Ngāru Wahia gathering to represent their interests, Labour and National, working together.
And so how would you like to see the 1919 laws kind of commemorated, celebrated, or remembered?
By people talking about this, community conversations are by far the best way to engage a community with its history. We know that. That's how oral history is kept alive. Then in addition to that, in Hamilton, we have decided that we would like, particularly in a more parochial sense, acknowledge these two women because they were our pioneers. They were the two women that were elected by the voters in this region and in the city. And we have been discussing with the City Council the possibility of erecting commemorative statues of these two women. Statues are very typical of their era. And we think that that would be a great way every day in the centre of the city to remind people that women have been part of the leadership of the community for a long time.
I can't reach the potatoes.
Community Garden with Oscar Perez.
I'm going to name this one Cynthia.
Go forth and prosper.